I know you guys remember that one. The Ministry of Darkness is the topic of choice tonight on your wrestling nostalgia. Let's get it going right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Wrestling Nostalgia version of the WWE Podcast. What a fun show tonight. As we continue with the Undertaker theme shows in honor of the Survivor Series pay-per-view, as we come up on 30 years of the Dead Man, and keeping in line with WWE's promotion of the Undertaker 30 years of the Dead Man, we are going to continue here with the Ministry of Darkness / the Corporate Ministry. A faction that took place in 1999. For those of you old enough to remember, that, my friends, is 21 years ago. It's just, it makes me, my head spin thinking about that, that it was 21 years ago that we had this angle. And it feels like 15 years ago, maybe, you know, 10, 15, does not feel like over 20 years ago. So those of you, again, who lived during that time of the Attitude Era at the peak of it, 1999, 2000, then you remember this faction very well, because this faction was on the heel side of things, opposing The Rock, opposing D-Generation X, opposing, most importantly, Stone Cold Steve Austin, who got a lot of mileage out of this group. And we have some clips that we will play as well for some of those awesome moments, and also really taking a look at how to create a group and create at least one or two stars out of that group and do it in a successful way. Today's product has very few groups that are headed for success. Very few. And when I say groups, I don't mean tag teams. Right? There's always a star on a tag team. There's always one person out of the two that you can see will be the bigger star. I'm talking about true factions, three or more. And the New Day, I mean, I guess you could say they were, you should say that they were extremely successful. But overall, the factions over the last 10 years have been subpar. I mean, yeah, we had the Nexus back in 2010. We have now Retribution, which is going straight down the tubes. Yeah, you have Ali, but I will say this. I watched the Hulu version of Raw, and this is the second week in a row in which they did not include the angles or television time that Retribution was on. I think that should tell you what is going on with Retribution and what WWE and how they view Retribution, how much they've cooled off on this group, realizing their missteps, realizing they had nowhere to go, realizing that they had an idea, but no long-term plan of execution. And they're realizing those problems right now. So again, factions are not easy, but when done correctly, it can be a huge success, because More often than not, they are heel teams. They're heel-based groups, I should say. Because if you have a group of five guys, well, then more often than not, they're going to outnumber anybody that is in a match with somebody else. In other words, they will always have the numbers advantage. Why is that a good thing for a babyface team? So, more often than not, they are heel groups. And again, we're seeing that with Retribution right now. But outside of that, I mean, again, I'm not including NXT in this, But with Raw and SmackDown, looking at the current product, it's pretty thin with successful factions. Something that I think is a lost art in today's product. But we're not here to talk about today's product. Of course, you're here to talk about nostalgia. We're here to take you back 21 years. And if you haven't experienced this before, again, I would really recommend that you hit the network, hit YouTube, and check out the Ministry of Darkness / the Corporate Ministry, which was really the corporation that merged with the ministry. And we'll get into that later as well. But it created some really good moments for all involved. It didn't last very long, maybe a year and a half or so, that this group actually existed. And until Vince McMahon was revealed as the higher power, which is when the whole thing dissolved. And I mean, I'm going to play that clip as well, which is one of the most memed / biggest reactions ever on Monday Night Raw, with Vince McMahon being revealed as the higher power of the corporate ministry. So that's going to be towards the end of it, because in chronological order, that was the end. So I guess I'm burying the lead, as they say in radio, about talking about the end rather than the beginning. So we're going to get to that in just a second. First, thank you guys for joining us here on the show. The show is growing because of you and because of our great co-hosts. Certainly with our new co-hosts on board, I'm getting a lot of positive feedback. With consistent co-hosts like Anthony DiMarco, we're getting tons of great feedback. I mean, honestly, and I'm not just saying this, right? Like, there's no reason to lie. We have not received any bad feedback about any of our co-hosts in a very long time. I will say that. So it is really a testament to our co-hosts. This is not just me. Yeah, I may have founded this place, but I can't keep it running without the co-hosts and you guys listening. So certainly, this is not an invitation to go, oh, well, I'm going to change that. I'm going to show him. I'm going to give him a piece of my mind about what do I think about some of his shows. No. It's not an invitation for that. It's just a testament that I wanted to bring forth and let everyone know about that. You know, I'm just proud of what we've built, and it's just the very beginning of what I think is going to be a top 10 podcast in the next couple of years. I'm realistic in my time frame. I don't think we're going to shoot to the top 10, top 5. It's very elite territory when you get there, because guess who's there? Jericho, Stone Cold, Jim Ross, right? You got all the people that have millions of followers to begin with. So that's certainly an elite group, but hey, why not? I think it's possible, guys. I mean, you guys just spread the word and keep this place going and keep this place growing. So enough of that. Tomorrow, there's a couple of shows coming your way. Number one will be Mailbag Episode 2. I've got a ton of voicemails. I'm recording it actually after this show, and I'm going to be releasing it tomorrow morning. But a ton of voicemails that you guys have sent me over the last week, and I will be airing those tomorrow and answering them live for you so that you get a complete episode, a separate episode for all the voicemails that your guys request. That's coming tomorrow, as well as your NXT review with Zach Smith, who is our beloved NXT review analyst here on the WWE podcast. So tons of content. Again, Rivalries Friday. Saturday is your SmackDown review and your New Japan Pro Wrestling. Yes, New Japan Pro Wrestling is a thing now here on the WWE Network. WWE podcast. Jeez. And then Sunday is your week in review with a co-host, or maybe by myself. You know, sometimes solo shows ain't so bad. So we will see, and I will keep you guys updated, but let's get into it. So what is the Ministry of Darkness? Well, to your surprise, it is a faction that The Undertaker created actually back in 1998. And this is per Wikipedia, because I mean, let's be honest, 21 years, I'm not going to go back and watch hundreds of hours of Raw to remember what happened. I'm going to get the Wikipedia version, the Cliff Notes version, I should say, of what the group was to kind of jog my memory and then pump out some audio to you guys, fill in the blanks. I'm not a mindless robot that's just going to read Wikipedia, but it does certainly jog my memory. So that's my resource now, that it's literally in front of me. So this is what Wikipedia has defined the Ministry of Darkness as. Here we go. The Ministry of Darkness was a professional wrestling stable in the WWF in 1999, actually debuted in 98, led by The Undertaker. The Ministry was a controversial group with pseudo-satanic themed storylines that included rituals and sacrifices. That is actually a really good description of this group. You got to remember, here's where I'm going to fill in the blanks and actually, you know, use my own mind and have an original thought. So here we go. This was the TV 14 era. I mean, known as the Attitude Era, it was TV 14 though. And some of the things that the Ministry of Darkness did, if it happened today, I mean, people would be knocking down Stamford, Connecticut, knocking down the doors at WWE headquarters. Certainly, we're in a much, much, much different time. We are in a much more sensitive time. Everyone's divided. It's a PG product on top of it. They have sponsors to worry about. They're a publicly traded organization now. So I get it. But back in 1999, man, it was a different world. They could do whatever they wanted. And boy, did they get away with murder, almost literally. I guess that's also a pun. The Undertaker was a very, very dark character. And he was actually even darker during this time than what you saw and what really since the PG era. In the PG era, he was just always talking about taking souls and digging holes. And he would really just refer back to, you're going to rest in peace. I mean, it was kind of the Undertaker greatest hits. Back in 99, it really was a bit satanic in nature. I mean, it was dark. I mean, he tried to embalm Stone Cold Steve Austin. He actually tied Austin to the Undertaker symbol. And held him up on Raw as if he was Jesus Christ. I mean, he literally tied him to a cross and put him on that cross and put him literally like 20, 30 feet in the air. I mean, it was a very disturbing sight. I remember that. That was one of the most, I guess, one of the more vivid moments in my mind. Another moment, he tried to marry Stephanie McMahon in a black wedding. We'll get to some audio from that. That's one of my more favorite ones as well. And ties into the whole higher power, greater power that Undertaker kept referring to for many weeks. So this is a story that I remember just hating The Undertaker. And I never really thought that Undertaker and Stone Cold Steve Austin ever had real good chemistry. Their styles, and here's the thing. Austin, my favorite wrestler of all time. I mean, personality-wise, it's not an interesting choice, as I always say. It's a very kind of boring, vanilla response, but it's true. Austin's the one that got me really stuck in wrestling and really made me watch WWF and not WCW back in the 90s. You have this hard-headed, redneck, tough SOB, and then you have the demonic cult leader. It did never really meshed personality, and honestly, it never really meshed, especially in the ring. And it's weird saying that with these two professionals, with Austin and Taker. And I've got some audio here a couple of the moments with Austin and Taker. But this pairing, for whatever reason, they just never gelled great in the ring. Their styles, I don't know. I don't think they had bad matches, but I guess you'd expect blockbusters from these two, but it was just oil and water. And it's no disrespect to either man. It felt like they never got together. You know, particularly at SummerSlam, the Highway to Hell. I reviewed that a couple of months ago. And I remember watching that. And yes, Austin got knocked out early in the match, and that certainly affected his performance. But they had many tag matches. They had other matches. I remember at Fully Loaded, when Austin beat The Undertaker in a First Blood match to finally end the Vince McMahon-Austin feud. I remember that. And even that, I mean, they weren't bad. It's just, I don't know. They never seemed to gel. I don't know if that makes sense. Because Austin seemed to be the primary target of this group, which is why I'm talking about him. It's not just because I love the character so much of Stone Cold Steve Austin, but because they truly were Austin was primarily the biggest target of the Ministry / the corporate Ministry. So how did this all come about? How did this all come about? Well, again, I'm reading from Wikipedia, but I also have audio to back it up. So here's what Wikipedia says, and they are correct. So after Paul Bearer turned his back on his son Kane and rejoined the side of Kane's brother, The Undertaker, at the Judgment Day In Your House pay-per-view event in October 1998, The Undertaker announced the Ministry of Darkness and a, quote, plague of evil that will be unleashed on the WWF the next night on Raw is War. Ooh, I don't know. I forgot that it was Raw's War. I keep calling it Monday Night Raw. It's Raw's War. And you know what? Why the hell not? I will give you guys some chills and really, really bring you back in time. Just take a listen to this and let me know what you think. All right. Oh, man, it literally gave me goosebumps because I haven't heard that fully in quite a while. So that's the era we're talking about. That, I mean, right now, I don't know about you, and I'm sure that took you back to a place in time in your life of where you were in wrestling and maybe in your, you know, wherever you were, your house, your parents' house, probably my parents' house. That's where I lived. I was freaking 14 years old. But that's where it took me back to, and just getting so pumped for Monday Night Raw that started at 9 p.m. And you couldn't be late. There was no such thing as TiVo back then. You couldn't just pause live TV. You had to be there. I remember literally just recording Raw on a VHS tape, and I brought it in for one of my friends that didn't have cable so he could watch Raw, and I'd try to cut out the commercials for him. It was, I mean, it's just crazy. On a VHS tape, I had to record Monday Night Raw with a VCR built into my TV. I felt pretty cool about that. So that's what the time brings me back to. And that really, that music right there brings me back to, you know, after you hear that, you're expecting to hear Jim Ross's voice welcoming us to Raw's War, Jerry the King Lawler, and then Austin's music hit to open Raw. I mean, that is just the way that it, my mind trails and it, the way that it goes, even 21 years later. So a little bit of a tangent there, but that popped into my mind when I heard Raw's War. I'm like, oh, give me the theme, right? Give me that theme. So I hope you enjoyed that little snip as I did too. But okay, back to the corporate ministry, or excuse me, the beginnings of the Ministry of Darkness. Here's again, I mentioned that it happened at Judgment Day, the night after on Raw's War. That's where the Undertaker turned heel because Paul Bearer turned his back on Kane and join the Undertaker once again, which made Undertaker heel. So there's your, really, that also shows you the power of Paul Bearer, right? That the manager could actually dictate how each wrestler was cast, heel or face. So much heat on Paul Bearer. And I would also recommend that you guys go watch the WWE Network. I believe it's The Mortician is what they called it. It's a documentary, quick documentary on Paul Bearer, Percy Pringle, right? So he was absolutely so influential in The Undertaker's career, one of the best managers of all time. It's just so damn good. I mean, he's no longer with us, obviously. He died a number of years ago. But Paul Bearer, I think, doesn't get the credit that he deserves sometimes. I mean, you know, you look at The Undertaker, and The Undertaker was incredible. But Paul Bearer was a guy that, in the background, added so much, and you don't realize how much he added until he's gone. And it was so influential, the promos he would cut, the faces he would make. I remember the faces Paul Bearer could make were just so obnoxious that he could cut a good promo. His "Oh, yes!" All that was, it was brilliant. Brilliant, brilliant. And the story of Paul Bearer and how he got to WWF was it was really a great story. I'd really recommend you check it out on the WWE Network. It, really well done. Whoever's doing the documentaries over there deserves a, you know, a pat on the back and a raise. Seriously, they're so damn good. Whoever is in charge of that, or probably a team, obviously. Okay, so I'm going to get to here the explanation from The Undertaker as to exactly why he joined Paul Bearer.
To clear my head and refocus on what it is I am here for. Now what we have is a beginning of a new era. And we will unleash with our ministry of darkness a plague for which the World Wrestling Federation has never seen, nor will it be ever understood amongst those who do not relish in the darkness. So now, those of you who do not declare shall be declared.
Okay. This is a 8-minute promo by Taker. And it basically says that, hey, I'm forming a group. And really gets into some dark stuff. I mean, basically saying that you don't have a choice. Anybody who doesn't relish in the darkness will be declared. Like, if you don't declare, you will be declared. I mean, there's a little bit of a... it's satanic stuff. Like, it just is, especially if you look at, you know, like, some of the relations to the Bible. I mean, like, I'm not going to get religious on you here, but it certainly touches on a lot of evils that plague the world and the spiritual, if you believe in such things. But it's pretty damn dark, and it's a sign of the times back in 1999. As many of us look back to the good old days, right? But that was Undertaker's quick explanation. He just saw the light, so to speak. But Austin was his first target. And Austin, during a championship match on Raw with The Rock, ends up getting hit in the head with a shovel by The Undertaker. The first time I really saw a shovel, like a spade, like a gardening shovel, be used in a wrestling ring. And Undertaker hit Austin in the head. And I remember on Raw the next night that Jim Ross showed some footage of house shows during the week that Austin had competed in, and how he sold blacking out after the matches. And I'll never forget that. I don't know why that sticks in my head. Of like, wow, they're showing non-televised matches on Raw. Like, they're showing those dark matches. They're showing those house shows on Raw. And it must be pretty serious if Austin's blacking out during those, you know. And it just was a nice touch. And then Austin comes out the following week. And, he's not happy. So he comes out, and ICP, Insane Clown Posse, Mosh and Thrasher of the Headbangers were in the ring, and I think you can guess what happened. Austin then goes on to declare that he's going to pay The Undertaker back and basically say that The Undertaker is going to be wearing this shovel by the end of the night. Again, a shovel. I mean, that's a interesting choice of weapon. Typically, it's a chair. Now, WWE's in love with kendo sticks. But it was such an intense rivalry. It was really, really good. So, okay. Moving on though, I want to also talk about what happened here. Now, Austin was abducted by the ministry, by Paul Bearer and the Undertaker, at first attempting to bury Austin alive and then attempting to embalm him. You guys remember that? Yes. Embalming him alive on air. Now, Austin was in a comatose state. He woke up at the right time just to escape, and Kane actually saved him to attack the Undertaker. And what happened was Austin actually ended up on that week's Sunday Night Heat hitting Undertaker in the head with a shovel as a measure of payback for what happened and costing him, when Undertaker cost him the WWF Championship. That actually, his payback happened at Sunday Night Heat, which actually was kind of ballsy that WWF would have done that, considering there's a lot of Sunday Night Football on. I mean, looking back. But moving on to what happened in this story, Austin ended up actually being able to send Undertaker to an asylum, and as payback, the Undertaker then sacrificed Austin to his symbol and tied him up, and that's what I described earlier. Austin actually ended up chucking or kicking, I should say, kicking Paul Bearer down a manhole. I remember that. That was kind of weird. I don't know how they actually ended up doing that from a logistics standpoint, but I remember Austin stunning Paul Bearer and also shoving him down a sewer. Yes, that happened. And then Austin and Undertaker had a buried alive match at Rock Bottom in Your House, where Kane cost him the match and Undertaker wasn't seen for the following month. At that time, also Bradshaw and Farouk of the Acolytes, i.e. JBL, was joining and had just joined the ministry. So now you have not just Undertaker, but he's starting to get some cronies, some disciples, if you will, of Bradshaw and Farouk, who really got their first big break here. We also had, shortly thereafter, we had the Brood, which consisted of Christian, Edge, and Gangrel. And Mabel, 485-pound Mabel, they renamed to Viscera, join as well. I mean, this happened in the next month or so. I mean, so he gained, I mean, like 6 followers in a month. And he then had a mission statement saying that he wanted to own the WWF and oust Vince McMahon. So that really was what his motivation was. Now, what started to happen with the ministry, though, was Undertaker talked about the greater power. He kept talking about a higher power, a greater power, and that he said he apparently owned the key to McMahon's heart and soul. And you guys remember the burning teddy bear? I remember the teddy bear that was burned at the end of Raw. And Vince McMahon on the ramp was just on his knees crying over this burned teddy bear. Undertaker set it on fire, which we later learned was belonged to Stephanie McMahon as a child. This is where we had Boss Man at WrestleMania 15 actually get hung from the Hell in a Cell with a noose. I said that correctly. Boss Man, Big Boss Man, was hung from the Hell in a Cell as the Hell in a Cell was being raised with a noose around his neck. I'm serious. It's brutal. I even watching that at 14, 15 years old, after everything I've seen during the Attitude Era, that was still really disturbing. That was a little much. I know they wanted to go extreme, but boy, oh boy. So shortly after that, after Backlash, which took place a month after WrestleMania, we had The Undertaker commandeer Stephanie McMahon's limo. And if you remember very, very famously, Undertaker looks back as he was the one driving and Stephanie got in the limo and he said, "Where to, Stephanie?" And he laughed and drove off with the screaming Stephanie in tow. I mean, I'm reading that verbatim, but yes, if you remember that, and Stephanie was screaming, and she had just been really introduced to the WWF fans at the time, There was no WWF Universe because we somehow, something happened where we all morphed from fans to a universe. I don't know when that transition took place, but somewhere along the way, we just kind of morphed into that via osmosis or something. But The Undertaker held a black wedding the next night on Raw after Backlash went off the air. That abduction took place at Backlash. Undertaker held a black wedding for himself and Stephanie because if he married the WWF's owner's daughter, he felt he could control the entire WWF, which was his ultimate goal. So, well, let's take a listen to who crashed the party.
Undertaker just hit the Vince show with a ball bat. And they're on him now. They're on him.
Vested in me by the Lord of Darkness, I now pronounce you as the unholy union of darkness. You may now kiss your bride.
Oh, for God's sake.
So this was a powerful moment for a lot of reasons, more than I remember. And so what happened, I mean, you can hear from the audio, but you can watch it yourself. We had Undertaker, who was, again, attempting to marry Stephanie McMahon so he could control the World Wrestling Federation. And he had a Ministry of Darkness with Midian and Gable, who was known as Viscera, and the Acolytes, Farouk, and JBL, known as Bradshaw at the time. And Big Show comes in to try to make the save, but Austin ultimately does make the save. He comes in with weapons in hand, and well, actually, no weapons at first, just ends up beating the hell out of people, delivering stunners, using a chair to just whack people in the head with. And I gotta say, I say this a lot, sometimes I really miss chair shots to the head. I'm not advocating for putting the health and well-being of wrestlers at risk because of my need for chair shots to the skull. But sometimes, man, you just miss it. They are just beautiful to watch sometimes. And I'm not sorry for that. But, I mean, again, let's all relax. I'm not advocating for bringing them back unless there's some safe, super safe way to do it, of which I don't know if there is. But this is powerful because it did two things. Big things really well. It number one added depth to Stone Cold's character in a way that we didn't see before. It added an element of compassion from Austin, who was just kick ass all the time, and it worked really well. But it showed that his character had compassion and understanding, as JR said, for knowing what's right and wrong. I mean, it's beautifully stated by JR, but that's the narrative they were trying to sell, and I bought it. And Austin was just doing the right thing. He didn't do it for Vince, who was being tortured by The Undertaker for the last several months. He abducted Stephanie McMahon, and he was after The Undertaker. Austin ends up saving Vince McMahon's daughter, and the powerful moment at the end here where Stephanie McMahon actually hugs Austin, and Austin doesn't return the hug. He just kind of stands there with his arms up like, I'm not hugging her. You know, I'm just kind of here. If she wants to hug me, I'm cool with it. I'm just not going to return her hug. And then Vince McMahon coming in at the end to hug Stephanie, reuniting with his daughter after a long search, after being abducted, it was really powerful, because it also not just showed compassion for Austin, but it also showed the level that Vince McMahon would go to screw Stone Cold Steve Austin. And we're going to get to that in just a minute, because now we're about to turn into the corporate ministry. The corporate ministry was the ministry of darkness and the corporation. Merge the two and you get the corporate ministry. So here is here's the Wikipedia version of how it happened. This happened actually on the very first ever episode of SmackDown, where The Undertaker proceeded to join forces with Vince McMahon's son, Shane, in turn gaining control of the corporation and merging his ministry with it to form the even more powerful corporate ministry. So this is where you have two big heel groups joining forces that, you know, it's good and bad. Because you have guys who normally wouldn't get the airtime that they do being involved in these groups. But the group just simply became too big, I think. I was never a big fan of the corporate ministry because of the fact of how watered down it became. It was like the WCW version of NWO when everyone joined the NWO and it just became, it became too much where it wasn't special when someone went to the NWO. It was just, again, it didn't mean a whole lot. The value and shock value of that was really just completely diminished. And that's what it kind of felt like with the corporate ministry. Too many people. And it didn't last very long. It was all about the greater power. Who's the greater power? And for months, and it seemed as if after WrestleMania 15, where Vince McMahon put in a master plan of sorts, he turned to The Undertaker to put this plot into place where The Undertaker abducted Stephanie. Stephanie didn't know about it. She didn't know she was part of this plan. But that's the level Vince went to screw Austin to gain sympathy on the Vince McMahon character, essentially turn him at least neutral slash a little baby face, because for how many years, a couple of years, you were just, you know, rooting against Vince, and seeing Austin beat the hell out of Vince was just what you wanted. And maybe you thought it was over after WrestleMania 15, when Austin recaptured the WWF championship from The Rock and Vince McMahon was stunned twice after that match. And you think, bam, it's over. And Vince just decides to put this plan into place that ultimately led to him being the greater power. And well, let's take a listen. It's really one of the most iconic moments in the Austin McMahon rivalry, and let's take a listen.
Got it, Vince. What do you say? What do you say, Vince?
Shane, I say I'm close enough right where I stand, right here and now. I say the games are over, Shane. I say the evil, demonic SOB show his face to the world now.
Gosh, JR, who is it? Here we go.
Who could it be?
It's me, Austin.
Oh, son of a bitch.
What?
It's me, Austin. It was me all along, Austin.
Damn, I cannot believe it.
You all bought it, hook, line, and sinker. You all bought it.
They did.
Even my immediate family bought it.
Look at Shane.
every damn one of you were made fools of.
You're a fool, JR.
But you know, I really didn't want to have to do it. Austin made me. Stone Cold Steve Austin made me fool you. He made me because, Austin, I had to teach you a lesson that you would never, ever forget. And now, Austin, now you know there is no price I will not pay.
Oh, man, it's me, Austin, and Vince, JR saying, "Aw, son of a," that's one of the funniest moments of Jim. I don't know why I find that so funny when Jim Ross cusses. It's just classic stuff. Vince McMahon pawning off his own daughter to get back at Stone Cold Steve Austin. I actually didn't see it coming. I did find it weird that Vince was on the screen and it kind of, it looked like a recorded promo. I remember also what happened is the Sunday Night Heat before, the Greater Power revealed himself to Stone Cold while he was tied up in the ropes. And then Austin went on a stunner rampage. I mean, I remember him stunning everyone on Sunday Night Heat. I mean, it was like 15 stunners, referees, announcers, everyone got the stunner. I mean, like everybody. It's a really funny, really, really funny. Austin just kept interfering in matches. Everybody got stunned. It was absolutely hilarious. It was called the Stunner Barrage. It was classic, just absolutely classic. So this is where, well, something bigger happens, where Linda McMahon shows up, and boy, oh boy, when Linda shows up, you know that business, as Jarrow would say, is about to pick up.
What all this means is that earlier today, I stepped down as the CEO of this company.
You what?
But not before I handpicked my own successor.
Oh, no.
And that successor, that new CEO, will have full power and privileges to run this company as he sees fit. So, Vince, Shane, allow Stephanie and me to introduce you to the new CEO.
Oh no, this can't be.
So let's go ahead and start with that dress code thing. I can go ahead and take off this power tie because I no longer need this power tie because, Vince, you always know that old Stone Cold always has the power finger. So here's to you.
Oh, man, that pop. It doesn't do it justice. I mean, if you guys could hear that, And do it in your own time. I mean, it's on my mic. Obviously, you can hear it. But it's just deafening, that pop that Austin got. And the look on Vince's face. It's just classic stuff. Absolutely. I mean, it brings me back. That's what this show is all about. And it certainly brought me back. You know, after this, though, the whole corporate ministry did seem to dissolve a bit. I mean, it wasn't what it was after this. It came to an end. Actually, when The Undertaker suffered a legit injury that year and was written out by quitting rather than taking a match ordered by Vince. So that's how it ended, very unceremoniously. They just kind of disbanded after Undertaker really got injured. But it was an influential group. I mean, you had people legitimate stars come out of that group. Bradshaw, who became JBL and became a very successful WWF champion, Universal champion, or Universal, Undisputed champion. Edge and Christian coming out of that, who joined the Brood, who eventually joined the corporate ministry, who eventually became their own tag team, their own single stars. You had big stars come out of this. And that's ultimately the goal of creating a faction, is to create individual big stars out of that faction. And I would say mission accomplished. And again, it was so influential in Austin's career, in The Rock's career. Triple H actually was a part of the corporate ministry at one point too. I mean, you just had almost, you know, half the heels, almost all the heels seemingly join the corporate ministry, which is why I'm glad that it didn't last too long and it was disbanded fairly quickly, because it was very watered down and it didn't really allow guys, even though they were getting more time than they normally would. It was just too much. It was information overload, and it just kind of all got to mesh together, which, it's not usually the best choice to make, but, Austin obviously went on to be CEO of the company. We all remember some of the classic stuff he did in the meeting rooms, having a beer drinking contest and changing around the budget and all this stuff, wearing his wrestling attire, his cutoff jeans and his leather vest into the office. I mean, it's just really good, great stuff. So I encourage you, if you haven't already, to check this out on the network or YouTube or wherever you can. But all right. Well, this was a blast, guys. I had a ton of fun. This really was a trip back in time for me. I mean, I really was able to kind of just zone out from life. And that's what I hope I was able to do for you, because that's what nostalgia is all about. You know, it's about just kind of escaping from reality and getting back into whatever you enjoy in wrestling. Obviously, if you're this far in the podcast, you love it just as much as I do. So, all right. Well, that concludes the nostalgia show. Tomorrow, again, don't forget, Mailbag Episode 2 is coming your way, as well as the NXT review show with Zach Smith. So that's just tomorrow. And of course, we have like four more shows after that before the week concludes. So hope you are all doing well. Hope that your week ends up being somewhat relaxing. And I will talk to you soon.